that again is an example where it could be very easy to look at the way someone else is doing it because you're not yet quite secure in your own process and go, huh, should I be doing it that way?
Yes, because I could look at you and say, oh, Alice has this period where she focuses on her sketchbooks and she gathers all her ideas and it's very organized. And all I do is blob paint around in mine. And I don't even know why I'm doing that half the time. And it's just something to do.
Welcome to Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
And we took a bit of a break last week, which you'll hear about if you listen right to the end, if you're remotely missed us. But it's as we said we would do. Sometimes when life catches up with you and sometimes something has to give. And last week this did. Not for any bad reasons, just busy reasons. Anyway, we're here today and we're going to be chatting about, what are we going to be chatting about? Sense of obligation, how to manage your time over the summer, perhaps. But before we get into that, what have you been up to since we last chatted?
I was kind of dreading that question because I was thinking, what have I been up to? What actually have I been up to? And this leads into our main topic, I suppose. There's so much personal stuff happening at the moment and just places I need to be for other people.
Yeah.
That work is taking a little bit of a back seat, but I am moving forward with preparations for this year's Find Your Joy. And that has meant getting my team back together. We've had meetings. Everything is pretty much recorded now, but there's a few last bits and pieces to record. And I've got my teenage neighbour doing the editing for me. So I've been giving her direction. So there's been a lot of that. I've been trying to build up content for my membership so that I don't have to worry about that when the course is running. Painting, I've been on and off with. I've been really inspired one day, done a bit, and then go a week. It's been nearly a week where I've not touched it. Yes, I've been busy, but also I've been feeling, I don't think I've got anything to add at the moment. I don't think anything I do will work out well. And I'm all right with that, whereas I once would have panicked. I just think I'm very busy. You know, this is not, you can't, Tracy said something. I don't know if she said it on the podcast last week or after we finished recording, but she said it on the podcast that we use a lot of our creative energy in what we do when we teach other people.
Yeah.
And when you're busy building up for a period of teaching, you are using a lot of that creative energy and you have to be kind to yourself and realize that you're not going to also be really creative art-wise. Mm. I think that's a sacrifice we both make a lot of the time.
Yeah, and I think it comes back down to this ridiculously crazy assumption that you can be firing on all cylinders all the time.
Mm. Yes. And you definitely cannot. Can I just say my body has just told me that I can't do that by giving me back pain.
Yep.
And then when that didn't work, making it go around to my stomach and then giving me a bad shoulder, a migraine. And finally, when that didn't work, an upset stomach until I was one day just laying there on the bed going, I feel terrible everywhere. And I thought, yeah, it's time to rest a little bit.
Yeah. And then what happened? You had to stop a bit.
Yeah, I actually took, I have been resting a lot more. I have been, that's why probably not much art's getting made because I'm taking those times to read a book or just lie there and do nothing or watch something on TV and just relax a little bit because as life is taking quite a bit out of me, as I know you too. There's just a lot of things going on and you just have to remember that you're not endless. You're not an endless supply of energy for everybody. So not much really, to be honest. What about you?
Exactly. When you say, oh, I'm not sure what I've been doing. And then you give us a huge, great big list of a lot of stuff. Very funny.
So what about you? What have you been up to?
Funnily enough, I've also had a bad back. It started before Open Studios and it was fine during Open Studios. I was just, you know, how will you do that thing of standing very consciously with your weight evenly balanced rather than standing on one hip? And then it occurred to me about 4 days later, oh, do you know what I could do? I could go for a massage. That would help. And it did. 24 hours, and then it was back again. Anyway, three massages in now, and now we're fixed and back and up and running. But it's very interesting that, same as you, it actually forced me to write, no, you actually physically can't sit at your computer and do this. Like, you can't. So there were things that I had to be present for on live calls, which I was doing standing up, walking around the room, because that was okay, or lying down on the floor listening. Couldn't sit in a chair and listen. And it's quite interesting that it's like, don't be in front of the computer. You shouldn't be in front of the computer right now. How many more times do I need to tell you? You don't want to be sitting in front of the computer. Really interesting. And then just the whole thing about like back being about like support and stuff. And I was like, no, I really don't think it was that. I think it's just because I was lifting my paintings in and out of the car awkwardly. And why were you doing that? Because you were doing them on your own, rather than asking for somebody to come and help you.
Yeah.
Really funny. Anyway, there we go. That is all a little bit better. And I have been equally doing, well, sort of in non-arty stuff. I have been away on a 3-day, away for 4 days, but on a 3-day training course in EFT, tapping, which I've been wanting to do for ages, and it was so good. And I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet, but I'm got some practices booked in, and I'm now officially qualified, which is like really interesting. And I just want to go around and fix the world now.
EFT is amazing. I find, yeah. I'm not if you don't know what that is, that's called emotional freedom technique, and you can find it on YouTube. You can see demo videos.
The ones on YouTube aren't as good.
No, but you can kind of see what it is. Yeah. It's what it's based on. And you will, if you don't know anything about it and you watch the videos, you think, well, that can't work. Mm. But try it. If I find it particularly helpful for anxiety and stress. Mm. I find I can very quickly calm myself down with it. And that's just me doing it on my own. And then doing it with a practitioner, you can really make some breakthroughs and things depending on the practitioner. So yeah,
it's a little bit like, I think of it, it doesn't have to be, but I think it's most powerful where it's a little bit, it brings in elements of talk therapy. It doesn't have to, you can just tap on a specific feeling or emotion, and it's connected with meridian points and energy lines in the body. So it literally works on your cortisol like really quickly. So you don't have to know or understand it. And it's just, you know, it was just basically 3 days of more evidence, if I needed any, that it's kind of magic. It's really, really good. So, yeah, so I've come back feeling all vibed up about that. And also, again, lots of personal family stuff picking up from university. We've got to go back for graduation. My daughter's been going interrailing. A lot of teenage organization. So yeah, again, a lot of that stuff going on, which leaves us with this question of how you manage life. When does art fit in? Energy levels, all of that. We had a great talk about sketchbooks, and sketchbooks traditionally for me come up in the summer. It's easier to be outside, just like gathering. So getting that activated again, I'm going to be trying to make sure I really set aside time for. But I think this time using them in a different way. In the past, I have used sketchbooks in the summer more as a gathering, collecting of landscape-based visuals and drawings, and just absorbing, soaking it up. I think this summer, I just really want to make sure that I set aside creative time that is really not focused at all on any kind of output, but is more more diverse in the gathering, perhaps. Mm-hmm. What about you? Is that going to be part of your summer?
Sketchbooks for me are always on the go, so summer isn't any different, because our lives are different. Where you had kids, and so you worked in a different way at different times of year. My year is, you know, I'm always in and out of sketchbooks in different ways. I've been thinking about this summer in particular in terms of not even so much not worrying about output, but maybe not worrying if I can't do anything artistic or very little. And it's funny because I was prepping the course stuff so that I'd have some much more free time for art, and that's out of the way, and so I can make more art. And then stuff came up for me, and for me it's a friend and my mom who were ill and needing help, and also that takes it out of you emotionally, that you know, the worrying about them and the hospital visits and all of that. And I just think, my mum being ill, it brings up other family issues which have to be dealt with, and I'm trying to work through all that. And so there's just not a lot of room for creativity. So I'm even further back than you in the sense that you're thinking, well, I don't want to put rules on how I gather. And I'm thinking, I don't want to put rules on whether I even do anything for a few months. And then if I do, like, I was going to see if I felt like it this afternoon, but then we had to do this, so I'm not going to do that now. But I don't know if I did feel like it, to be honest. So when it came to it, would I have felt like doing anything? I don't know. You mentioned something about having seen things on Instagram about people telling you what you should do and where you should be and what you should be doing. Yeah. Focusing on.
Because I've literally had my phone turned off for 4 days. And when I turned it back on again, I mean, nice things on Instagram, but also, again, it sort of just hit me, you know, there's a lot of ads and, you know, for me, a lot of business ads. You must do this. Is your lead magnet doing a
There's one on YouTube, and I don't know who this woman is, but she goes, business coaches, stop doing this. And I just think,
she's standing on a balcony.
I'm not sure, maybe, because I never see her. I just hear her. But it's like, stop. You know what, love? Stop yelling at me, because I'm just going to skip right past that. stop doing this. No, maybe it's right for whoever they are to do whatever it is you want them to stop doing. There's one that tells you how the way I do my selling is absolutely the wrong way and absolutely will not work, and this is the way to do it. And I just look at it and think, well, I can prove that's wrong for me. Maybe your way is right for you, but you're there telling everyone. So yeah, that feeling of being told constantly that you must do this, you must do that,
and the way that you're doing it, the way that's working for you currently is wrong.
Yeah,
shut up.
Yeah. And it's a very masculine energy, even though it's often women who are doing the selling that way now as well. It feels very masculine to me, that do it my way and follow these rules, or almost like a parent. And it makes you naturally not want to do anything. So, but there's also this. So when you said that, it made me think about how, I'm sure people can relate to this, when you go through Instagram, sometimes it can feel like in your head, everyone's saying that to you if you're not in that place. So if I go on Instagram and you have a post about how you're doing something great in your sketchbook, I don't know if you did have, but say you did. And then I think, oh shit, Alice is spending loads of time on her sketchbooks and I haven't done anything. And then I go down and the next person says, getting ready for my next big exhibition. And I think, oh shit, they're doing an exhibition and I haven't even been in there, or finishing up my series of paintings and varnishing, or launching my new thing.
Or having a lovely day at the beach with your family. Oh, yeah.
I must take a digression, because on the Glennon Doyle podcast, We Can Do Hard Things, Glennon Doyle's sister is apparently terrible for portraying family holidays as perfect by forcing her family into a perfect family photo that no one wants to be in. And so she makes her husband and her children pose just so, and everyone's got to smile and everyone's got to look happy, even though everyone's having a horrible time because everything went wrong. So yeah, things like that, which are coming up and making you feel, now I'm not falling into that trap at the moment, but I'm just saying it's a very easy trap to fall into, between the ads and the people doing things you're not doing.
Yeah.
That's why I think people get tired of social media. You've got to be able to view it through a lens of distance, I think. Like, okay, they're all saying things and it doesn't have to push me into feeling like I have to do those things. Because if they were dealing with, at the moment, what I'm dealing with, they wouldn't be doing that thing.
No.
And there have been times when I have managed, I mean, in the last few years, to deal with some really difficult things and keep going and producing and doing things. And I can still do that to an extent, but only one thing at a time. So I can do the course and I can make that as good as it can possibly be, but not if I'm also trying to do something really great creatively as well.
Yeah.
I just don't have the gas in my tank at the moment for all of that, I think.
Yeah, and I think there is also a stage of business, life, awareness, whatever it is, that is a luxury, is that there are times when you can step back from things. And mm-hmm. I was thinking about this morning, about the stage where you're really keen on growing things, how much you're prepared to do for it.
Mm.
And on the one hand, why that is lovely, because you have that sort of fire in your belly and you have that spark that pushes you into doing things that probably you don't want to do forever, to be honest. It's like, you know, that real high motivation, and you discover something new and you're all fired up about that kind of thing and you'll do it. And then people say about, oh, but it's about sustainability and sustaining things on a longer level. Yes, that's true. And also there is a natural variation when we are more excited, when we are prepared to do things, and being honest about that at that growth stage. Are you that interested? Are you prepared to do these things? Are you stretching your comfort zone and doing all of those things? And also, it's very easy to say, and then you can make it about consistency. And I think there's a danger of kind of going, oh, yeah, it's really easy to step back. Because the reality is, until you're at a certain stage, when you do step back from something, things generally slow down.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And I think I get frustrated, and it's none of my business, but I get frustrated when I hear people saying, oh, I'm going to start my own business, but I'm just going to do it really gently and easily. And I'm just going to, because I think, well, it won't succeed then, because there's an initial push which is needed when you start something. Like you say, you have to learn, if unless you're going to hire people, and even then you have to learn how to make a website and do this and do that, and learn how, I remember learning how Kajabi worked. Only the biggest motivation would make me slog through that, because I don't like that kind of thing. But I had to do it because I couldn't afford to have someone do it for me at that point. And yes, there's a luxury that comes after a certain point where you can step back for a little while, not forever. You know, we're not talking Bill Gates status here, but you can step back for a little bit and give yourself a breather. But you only get that luxury, I think, if you've done that hard work and push. You can't get that luxury unless somebody else is supporting you, or you have another source of income, or you don't need to worry about money.
It's the same, isn't it, though? You know, with art and with what you're making and with sketchbooks, it's like when I was showing, like I made a point on this call of showing my sketchbooks from 10 years ago. You know, and there are pages in there that are not beautiful. And some of the comments, people are saying, oh, but your sketchbooks are beautiful. No, I've literally just showed you some of the pages that I didn't like, don't like. The point is, you don't stop there. You do keep going. You keep doing. And now, even now, you know, when I pick up a sketchbook for a kind of drawing that I haven't done for a while, there's a little bit of a rusty period. And then it sort of clicks in with what you know. But I can't think of a single thing in life where you don't go through a warm-up learning period of doing that. And I think what I've learned is that this thing of consistency doesn't suit me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not how I operate best. And you're like, even at the beginning of this conversation, you said, oh, you use sketchbooks more consistently throughout the year. And you do. It's a very you use them as a very different part of your practice within the studio. I use them for notes within the studio, but I don't make things in my sketchbook while I'm painting. When I'm painting, I make things in the painting. I'm not making them in my sketchbook. And there's that, again, is an example where it could be very easy to look at the way someone else is doing it because you're not yet quite secure in your own process and go, should I be doing it that way?
Yes, because I could look at you and say, oh, Alice has this period where she focuses on her sketchbooks and she gathers all her ideas and it's very organized. And all I do is blob paint around in mine. And I don't even know why I'm doing that half the time. And it's just something to do. And so she's doing it right and I'm doing it wrong. But when I've tried in the past to do it that way, it doesn't, that's not how it works for me. It's more like, I might get a burst of inspiration, and this goes to human design, manifestor type energy. There'll be a short burst of ideas and inspiration. Then I'll be off gathering. It will work that way, but only if there's an idea that I'm reacting to, and then it'll die off. And I think that's the other thing, just to follow that thread of human design, that I never knew and I batted against at first when I read my profile, this idea in my profile that there are bursts of energy where massive amounts of things get done and then periods where I'm supposed to rest. I was like, nah, I've never been a rester. That's not true of me. And yet I see now, no, I've not necessarily stopped moving about and doing things, but haven't produced in that period like I have in the period of energy. So what happens if when I feel that kind of the I don't have my next inspiration, what happens if I just then let things go a bit and don't do anything? This is the first time I'm really trying that, because what I've done in the past is keep being busy, keep acting like a generator. For those who know about human design, we must do a podcast about this one day with someone who knows what they're talking about. But a generator person can have consistent energy, not necessarily to do the same thing, but to work at the same pace for a long time, whereas mine very much ebbs and flows. I didn't understand that, and now that I do, it makes a lot of sense to me. And it takes a lot of trust to wait for when the next big burst comes and then to follow that. You know, because what if it doesn't come? What if I just sloth around sitting in my garden chair for years, running what out if? Of money slowly, and then
what if?
And then what if I'm homeless because I got nowhere to live? And then what if and what if?
It's really interesting, though, isn't it? How our mind jumps to the. Why is it so easy to jump to the negative comparison rather than the self-celebration?
Yes, to say, look what
that's what we're talking about, isn't it? We're talking really about honoring yourself and whatever else is going on in your life, and also I think acknowledging that does take some conscious effort. You know, it takes conscious effort to be aware, first off, of the times and the places where you're not doing it or where you feel you're being pulled or pushed by your own rules about, like, even my rules. It's summer, I must be doing more in my sketchbook this year or not.
Yeah,
you know, even your own rules that you've set up for yourself that have worked for you before that might not, that's potentially why it's a bit confusing and maybe a little bit tiring, is because you kind of think, okay, well, I did that before, that worked, should I do the same thing again? But actually, life's changed, you're different, there are other things going on. You know, so is there that constant cycle of reinventing? I feel that quite strongly, that constant cycle of reinventing, which is both exciting and it can be quite tiring because there isn't one single solution for it.
Yeah, a bit frustrating. So you think, oh, so you're going to go off on that path now, are you, Louise? Now there's a whole new thing that you've got to work out. Why are you doing that? It's a bit like with looking for an outside studio space. Why am I doing that? I know in my own mind why I'm doing it. I have a clear sense. So it's funny when people say, I know in my own mind. Well, I don't know in your mind. I know in my own mind. I know why I'm doing it, but it would be nice to be the kind of person who was quite happy not to sometimes. But I'm not, so there's no point in dwelling on that. I'm not. But I'll tell you one thing I've noticed in that looking for an outside space that relates to what you just said. I can find myself, and this I think is also in my human design, I can find myself looking at the different types of studio space that other people have as I think about what building would work best. And I think, oh, I really love the way that guy has that giant hangar, you know, and it's like just all empty except for artwork, and you can climb up ladders and get to the roof and all that. That'd be fantastic. But I really like how that woman over there has that really cozy space that feels homely. And I want a bit of that and a bit of that. Well, that's not possible because you can't, it's either an industrial warehouse hangar or it's, and I can, we've said this before about looking at the kind of life you could have. I could live here, I could live there, I could live in a caravan, I could live in a mansion, I could live in New York, I could live in the countryside. I can see all those lives. It's the same with studios, and it makes it difficult for me to choose a path to go down because I can instantly see all the downsides and all the upsides of the other one that I didn't choose. And I can find myself frozen in that as well, which is the going back to that, what when you see the influence of other people.
Yeah.
Easily led. That's me. Easily led. So I think I need to, when it comes to big decisions like that, or even what I'm going to do in the summer in my studio, tune out some of the scrolling and looking at what other people are doing, and try and tune in as much as possible to what feels best for me.
It does go quieter. In my experience, it definitely goes quieter on social over the summer. And I think there is a benefit in that if you want to use this time in quite a focused time to be sort of on in your business, is that fewer people are posting, there is less going on, your things maybe are more likely to get seen. And there will be some people in your audience who just aren't switched on at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way the whole social thing is going, in a way, dare I say it, I quite like it now because it is even more breaking tethers from what you do and what the outcome is of it. And it's taking you back to that position of going to post something because I want to, because I'm excited to share it, not because it's going to get X, Y, Z or lead to this. And I think that's the same with your studio space as well. Like the right thing is just going to come. I think when the right thing comes up, you'll know it. And you've had a frustration with this one, mm-hmm. which is just really annoying.
Yeah.
It's really annoying.
We'll go into because it's very boring for everyone. Yeah. But I did find the right one and it now might not be the right one and I don't know. And it's like, ugh. But maybe it wasn't the right one, or maybe it is the right one and this is just a little hiccup in the road or a test. I don't know. We'll see. But yes, that is a really good point. I think with social as well, the other thing I've been thinking about is I heard on Diary of a CEO podcast, that guy, Stephen Bartlett, I think he was quoting someone else, but he said, when you think about the evolution of the human brain, and I apologize to knowledgeable people if I get this wrong, but he said our brains really haven't evolved that much in 10,000 years, and yet our world has changed so much. And when you think about our brains are meant to be, we're meant to be close to about 10 people. But so any level of fame, or and which I'm saying social media is fame on a micro level because you have an audience of people who are watching what you do. And if it's 1,000 people or 10,000 people, or you have these people who are looking at what you're doing with your artwork and commenting and responding and paying attention to you, and we're not meant for that many people to be looking at us and paying attention to us. And that is a really good point about that bombardment that comes in if you are someone who's very sensitive to what other people are doing. I prefer that to easily led. I'm going to say I'm sensitive to what other people are doing because easily led feels horrible to me. But it's true, you know, really sensitive to that and this and that. Some people are not. Some people can just shrug all that off and continue on their path, which I really admire. That means you have a defined G center and go you, but I do not. So just quietening, I think actually we've got to a good point here. For me anyway, this is like my psychoanalysis session, because quieting down noise from others, I think, is my goal for this summer. I'll stay in focused on launching my stuff in September and maybe finding a studio space, maybe not, but doing it my own way without looking at anybody else and just responding to what feels good to me. And letting some of that bombardment die down a little bit, I think. Doesn't mean I'm going off social media, because I think it's essential for me for marketing and being, I just think it's so important, but I'm maybe not going to absorb as much of other people's activities.
Yeah, it's knowing what your capacity is, isn't it? And that fluctuates. I think that's the thing, is that there are times where you can take it on board, and actually seeing what other people are doing could be stimulating. And then when you're in a sort of compressed zone, which you are a bit at the moment, that limits your capacity. And so you've just got to kind of shave off some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
And whether it's, as you say, family and health commitments, or, you know, this time of year, people who've got younger children off school or organizing holiday. I mean, there's a lot going on. And I just think we owe it to ourselves not to flipping add to our own list of burdens.
Yeah.
certainly not turn something that you actually enjoy or want to be doing into a burden. And that's a really careful thing. And I remember hearing this way early on, you know, lots of people said, you know, don't turn something you love, don't turn your hobby into your job. Because, you know, it will become a job, and then you'll have lost the thing that you love for its own sake. Now, I'm not sure I agree with that, because I think actually if you pick the right thing and you turn it into a job, yes, you're going to have to work at it, but you're doing something because you've got a real drive and a passion and enjoyment for it. And I can't imagine anything better than that.
Yeah.
But you certainly do have to be aware about when the balance is tipping over, for sure.
Yes. I think when you say, I love painting, therefore I'm going to paint for a living. What sells? Paintings of rabbits in watercolor sell. I'm going to do paintings of rabbits in watercolor and market them really well. And then you set up a business. Not there's anything wrong with doing that if that's what you love, said quickly. Please don't write to me if that's what you love doing. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But if you've done that because you've decided that's what will sell, that's when it becomes the burden that stops being the thing you love. But I agree with you. If you do it the way you love doing it, it doesn't turn into that, I don't think. But you can mentally turn it into that. You're right. If you put that pressure on yourself and say, well, I should be doing it. And I just think that's the big lesson I've had this year, is a lot less shoulds on myself. I'm quite good at not shoulding on other people, but I'm really bad at shoulding on my own head. So I'm going to do less shoulding.
the should-free summer.
Yes. We should make that a thing.
Should-free summer. I mean, I'm going back to sketchbooks again. I really had it that I can't tell you the number of times I packed to go on holiday and packed a watercolor kit and a sketchbook, and it packed and it went away and it came back totally untouched. Like, I had to learn that lesson, like, 9 years running. I was like, just don't bother taking the thing. Like, when you're away on holiday, that is not what you feel like doing. That is not the environment in which you are stimulated creatively. When you are on holiday, you want to swim, enjoy nice food, read good books interspersed with trashy books, see new places. I do not want to be creative on holiday. Don't want to be creative on holiday.
Yeah. So now you know.
But because of that, like, I should be doing like sketchbooks of things.
Yeah.
You know, But again, it's like the back thing, isn't it? How many times did I have to learn that lesson of packing that flipping thing in my suitcase and unpacking it and feeling guilty that I'd taken it away and not done anything? And was I a real artist if even when I was away from home and you had all the time in the world, I was choosing not to do drawings of Italian hillside villages?
Yeah. I think, no, you're not a real artist. I think we can all agree. Alice is not a real artist because she doesn't want to draw villages.
I mean, you know, the last few days I have been definitely not a real artist and I've enjoyed every minute of it. You know, I've been sewing things, I've been fixing things, I've been learning something totally new, totally unconnected with art, and really enjoyed it.
I think all that is important part of what a real artist does anyway, because you have to bring new things in.
Yeah.
In whatever way you do that, you have to bring new things in. And what you're doing now with EFT might seem unrelated, but you don't know that it is. It might end up being related. Something from that might come in as a thread, and we never know that. But if we just stay in our little bubble saying, well, I must produce, I must do this, I must do the thing I've always done before, as you said, then it's just a stale cycle that's not going to lead anywhere.
So are we going to leave people with a little challenge then?
Oh, what, have you got an idea?
Well, not as in, let's have a fancy title and three steps and a place. No, nothing.
Oh, right. But maybe what is their should free summer going to look like?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
And if I was organized and doing my list of shoulds, I would make a graphic and do a post and yeah.
But we probably won't do this. Because it's a should-free summer, so this is the most loosey-goosey challenge you've ever been set.
Basically, I'm a little bit worried. I have to say, I am a little bit worried. I feel like something is shifting quite a lot more in that direction with me, and it is, A, quite exciting, and B, it feels a little bit like the Wild West.
Say more.
Well, okay, what we've just talked about, 2 years ago, I would have done exactly that. I would have gone, let's have a thing, let's have a post about it, let's get people to comment. And now I'm just like, if you want to listen to it and do it. Great. If you listen and think that's a good idea and go on your merry way and don't change anything, great.
I feel more comfortable with this because sometimes I would be really busy. And you would message then and say, shall we have a meeting to talk about how we're going to do the five steps or whatever? And I'd be thinking, oh no, where am I going to fit that in? I've got to do this now. Yeah, so I hadn't thought of it until you said it, but yes. And it's just like me not doing the podcast and messaging you and saying, well, we have to do something. So I'll find a guest and I'll do it. And then me not doing that and you not doing a graphic is an actual step in our should-free summer. So if we're doing it, people, you can do it.
Yeah, I do worry that sometimes it might lead to me just like putting my flip-flop feet up in the sunshine and not doing anything ever again. But I also know that that's actually probably not true for me.
I think that's not true for you. You might do that for some nice weather, but you won't do that forever. You'll soon have another idea and you'll be working.
There'll be a nice little pause created, and who knows what will bounce into that space. So, do you have anything to leave us with? What has inspired you?
I do. Well,
that's impressive. Just that a lot on its own, can we just say, given all the stuff that's going on?
Yes, I have something that inspired me. Yes, I actually messaged you last week and said, have you watched this documentary? Because I want to talk about it. And you hadn't seen it. So we didn't do the podcast anyway. But it's a documentary on Netflix about Lewis Capaldi, who is early 20s, young kid to me anyway, seems very young, singer. Has big hits, and that's all I knew about him till Glastonbury when he struggled on stage, and I learned that he has Tourette's syndrome, and So then I started looking him up, and you know how you go down those rabbit holes on YouTube and you start, and he turns out to be, I swear, one of the funniest people I've ever seen. He's hilarious. So I was watching all his hilarious videos on YouTube, and that led me to his documentary on Netflix. And it's a documentary about the year after he had his massive album. So apparently he had this massive all-time bestseller, biggest selling album since the Beatles. I don't know, all sorts of records. And then he had to make album number two. And at one point he said in the documentary, I spent my whole life writing this first one, and now they want a second one in a year. And they flew him to LA, and he's from Glasgow and he lives with his mum and dad, and they flew him to LA and he was meeting with all these professional songwriters, and they were saying, not sure about that one, what about this one? And they were messing with his art, and he isn't complaining at all, but you're watching it happen. And it really was so, and he just gradually gets ill and starts to have these twitches and tics and all the stress. And his mum and dad are trying to help him through it, and it's really moving and lovely. But the thing I took away from it more than anything is this idea of he literally had the dream. He was playing in pubs. He was picked out from obscurity. He became everything he ever wanted. And for a year, he was blissfully happy. And then the next thing had to happen. And then, of course, success causes issues. And it made me really, again, in this reflective time that I'm in, just think about what is success and what are you willing to go through? Because success brings just as much trouble as not success does in a different way. And do you want that? And what are you willing to do for that? And are you the kind of person that can cope with it? And I haven't come to any conclusions, but I found it fun to watch because he's a fun kid and there's a lot of it, you know, a lot of fun in it as well, but also moving and kind of thought provoking. So if you've got Netflix, it's worth an hour and a half. I don't know what it's called. I think it's something like How Am I Feeling Now? I'll put a link in the show notes.
But okay.
Yeah, I recommend it.
It sounds in a way like a classic upper limit problem in terms of like Gay Hendricks' book, Big Leap.
Yes.
Absolutely fascinating. I mean, you know, you said whether you're the kind of person, I'm not sure that there's the kind of person, but I do think that how we grow and managing that, and like if we get off balance or out of sync with, you know, friends and beliefs of family and all of that kind of thing, we really have to like push the whole Play-Doh-y lump along together. Like if a bit gets left behind, it's quite tricky, or something suddenly stretches out ahead or puts us in a space that feels uncomfortable with. It's like elastic, it'll pull you back again. Like really fast. And that's why I've always felt like there isn't a race, there isn't a rush. Like, you don't need to be in a hurry to do this stuff. And I think that's why often you see it in areas where people suddenly get catapulted into something.
Mm-hmm.
Like he suddenly got did he didn't get in by winning a like
no he got a record deal from playing, right. He'd been playing pubs from the age of like 11 and sneaking in and pretending to be older. But he was pubs and he was gradually building an audience. And I guess he got a record company and an agent, and he was just really, really good. And so his songs just took off. And by the time his first album came out, his arena tour was already sold out before the album came out. So that's how his songs are just very commercial and also quite good. So just that right spot to be very commercial without being deliberately commercial. So if you're, say, take that, you've been designed to be that successful machine, you might not be good at it, but your managers have put you on a track and it wasn't that situation. This is more like you're painting away in your studio and suddenly someone says, here, have a show at MoMA, and you know, the whole art world is there, and some of them are saying you suck, and some of them are, you know, laughing at your work, and some of them are praising you, and all of that. I suppose it's that level of of nuttiness.
Yeah, and when you say it like that, who would want it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just why it's just so interesting to do it all kind of together, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, just thinking about what you actually want. So it goes back to what to our challenge for this summer. So what about you? What do you have that?
I've just got a pure entertainment little thing that I watched while I was away, which is on Amazon Prime. It's called Modern Love. And it's based, I think, on a New York Times running feature, which is just like short clips of, have we spoken about it before?
No, but I know the column. I used to read it in New York. And I think I've watched one with my favorite guy in it, whose name I can't remember, who's in Fleabag, the hot priest.
Yes. With the gay couple adopting the baby.
Yes.
I know. That was the one I watched.
My future husband. So,
I've watched
he's gay, so
you know, quite a few of them. And when I was away, because we were doing all of this kind of, you know, quite deep work, and I thought I want something that's going to be light and positive, and a bit, I don't want to watch, I'm not going to watch an episode of Black Mirror and then go in so I watched that and I just thought, oh, it's lovely. So they're little short standalone, they're about a half hour long, and they're really just really nice things to dip into. So that's Modern Love on Amazon Prime. There we go, nothing to do with art. That's it for us this week. So we hope you've taken something away with this as you head into your lovely summertime. We may be a little bit more ad hoc over the summer. We've got to do a diary check and work out where we're going to be and who's got time. So keep an eye. If you're not subscribed already, you'll want to make sure that you're subscribed so that when a new podcast pops up, you definitely make sure to see it. And we will see you next time. If you want to catch up with what we're doing, you can follow Louise on Instagram at LouiseFletcher_art and me at Alice Sheridan Studio. And if you want to hear about Louise's course, we can find all the details on her website, and make sure you're on the waiting list for that at LouiseFletcherArt.com. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. I want to tell you, I'm very proud of myself, because on Monday night, I almost couldn't stand it that we weren't going to put podcasts out. So I recorded one on my own. And then the microphone hadn't worked and it didn't sound great. And then I thought, stop, Louise, talk to yourself. You are going to do this for what reason? You are just doing this out of a sense of, I have to do this. Do not edit this podcast. And I was like an alcoholic with a bottle of wine in the fridge. I was just all night thinking about that podcast that I could edit and get up, and I didn't, and it didn't go out. So I apologize. Apologize if this is an outtakes to anyone who missed our podcast, but it was a big personal step for me forward to not do that.
Because I messaged you, I was like, okay, well, we could do it when we get back, or we could just do what we said we would do and occasionally skip a week.
And I started shaking and twitching, but I did it, and nothing bad happened.